How do you know they didn't just melt in the fire?
Science. Do you want the long answer?
This is the Extra Hot Crate Podcast, episode 376 for the week of October 11th, 2021. I am Crime Apple, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Sequential Bill, Sarah D. Bunting.
Trace me.
Yeasty Brewer, Tara Ariano.
Cheers.
And Persuasive Pomegranate, Sid.
Why are you eating the evidence?
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us for the first time, she is a listener and a Patreon supporter. You can often see her chopping it up on our Discord. It's Sid! Welcome, Sid!
Hey, welcome!
Hello, hello!
Hello! We're here to talk about CSI Vegas. We are back in Las Vegas where a new team is running the crime lab. But can Jim Brass, now retired, mostly blind, and living with an exotic bird, trust these strangers to handle the case when he evades an apparent assassination attempt apparently related to one of his old cases? You'd think he could, but then Sarah comes back from San Diego to work on it, and she's not the only old face or name to come up in the pilot. Let us do the Chen check-in. Sid, should our listeners watch CSI Vegas?
Nope.
Sarah.
Nope.
Dave.
If you like older and slower versions of things you used to love, yes.
I agree. If you like cop shows and CSI, it's fine. If you never watched CSI, you're not going to start here. Much as I said last week about Many Saints of Newark. Sid, we asked you on because I knew from Twitter that you had also, like Dave and I, undergone a CSI rewatch of late.
Undergone. Jesus.
And a lot of times when you look at a cast list on a project, you can kind of make out the shapes of who they wanted when you look at who they actually got. So let's start here. If you had been able to choose three opening credits cast members from season one of the original series, would these be the three that you picked?
That is an excellent question. Yes, for Gil, probably not for Sarah, and yes, maybe for Hodges. Kind of liked him.
Mm. Well, I would go to absolutely for Gil Grissom because he's my favorite character. In the original, the problem is with this reboot, he's gone from quirky robot to boring old man. Out of everybody else who was on the original show, the one I missed the most was actually Nick Stokes. And hear me out why. Nick Stokes is my CSI watching punching bag. He is what Buck is to 911.
Yeah.
Nick Stokes is to CSI in that I love watching this character because it is such a kind of a dopey take. Certainly post being buried alive and the weird sort of characterizations that the actor chooses with Nick Stokes delights me because I feel like it is kind of bad. So yeah. I would say Grissom and Stokes for me. And then out of the rest, the problem with CSI Vegas for me is I miss characterizations that made the show fun to watch for myself. That Stokes angle being one, the Catherine Willows, this is a mother's worst nightmare.
Yes.
Take on everything is something that made the rewatch very enjoyable for me. Like me and Tara, whenever Catherine Willows does something original CSI, whether it is having her daughter kidnapped
or spilling a coffee,
having to pick up donuts on the way home from work, it is a mother's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these are the things that are missing from CSI, and I don't think from CSI Vegas, and I don't think it is just a get familiar with the new cast. The new cast seems pretty generic as far as the archetypes they're writing for.
Sarah, what do you think? Who would you bring back?
Gil, for sure. I was thrilled to see Brass.
Yes.
His repartee with his avian companion made me laugh. I'm not proud of that. I did watch all three episodes that were available because I thought they were going to wrap up a certain mystery arc. I would love to hear everyone's theories about who did what later on Twitter, but I was a little bummed out that I spent three episodes and got no resolution because this is like, you know, CSI, the new class cases are fine, but I don't care about these people. I definitely don't care about Luke Cafferty from Friday Night Lights and his work wife whose pants are on fire for him's whole Dave and Maddie thing. Like, we did this already. No. And then, oh God, I mean, I just don't understand why you can't go to Hulu and watch the old one. And after three episodes of this one, that's what I did. And it's like, it's perfectly fine looking at the evolution of Catherine's hair, always beautiful in a different way each year. Sarah's split ends, the inverse of that. I don't think this needed to be rebooted. And I'm someone who sort of watched off and on until the end and really had no problem. Like, Gil is my favorite, but I also liked Fishburne and I liked Danson. Like, you know, people came and went and the bones of it were good because it's a procedural.
Yeah.
It's not always elegant at what it does, but it doesn't need to be. And it certainly didn't need to be reinvented this soon a time afterwards. So apparently the ratings were and I get it.
That makes sense to me. Whole idea is to introduce this new cast, whoever they are, but drop that plot and fold them into the main Hodges who did what thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They couldn't figure out which half of the formula they wanted to really put a spotlight on. I think you're totally right. And I feel like you nailed it. Like, it should have been the grissom side of it. That should have been the thrust of it. Mm-hmm. That is your main ingredient. And then you put in everything else and you sort of slowly mix them up because that is why you're watching, right? You're not watching because you want to watch another forensic show. You're watching because these are your old friends coming back. And, you know,
Exactly.
Episode one is like The Force Awakens. Like, you don't see Gil Grissom until the very end standing on a hill. And it's like, oh, just get to the Grissom factory because we've all seen the ads. Reason this show exists. Yeah. And speaking about the credits, that was like the number one thing where you can tell, like, oh, everything about this is older and slower. Like, even the credits were like, they cut less, they were less kinetic, they had less going on. And that like showed throughout the first episode too, because the first episode, the camera work was slower. Like, even the computer generated, you know, zoomy zoom stuff, which CSI is famous for, there was less of that. And what they did use was like not germane really to what was going on in the case. Like, the first time they use it was a parrot drinking water. And it's like, here's some parasites in the water.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's a bloodstream. No, it's water. Oh, it's a parrot drinking. And that's how they introduced brass. It was like, it's novel. But if that's the only use you really get out of that whole shtick, then I feel like you don't really understand CSI as well as you should.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of weird edits in the episode, too. Like, just like bad editing. There's a scene where Sarah Seidel goes with one of the new bloods to an abandoned factory of some sort.
Yep.
And there's this whole scene where she's like going to bolt cut the lock. And it really is like, you can tell there's a half a second more of white noise that or white space that should have been in the dialogue. And it just like skips abruptly, like stuff that you would never like stuff that I do once in a while by mistake on the podcast. But I am not, you know, a network editor. And there's a lot of moments like that, just really weird editing choices that felt like this whole thing was rushed.
I also thought it was like, okay, here's, you know, is this bird in the Costa Rican jungle with Sarah and Gil? And then here's brass. And then in the year of our Lord, 2021, to go to this retired cop shooting a invader of color and then to just be like brass under fire, like guys when are you, because I don't understand when they are in the life of the culture in this writer's room.
I mean, there's a lot of instances across the three episodes we saw where people are like, hey, could you give us a sample, or the CSIs are, and the person is like, do you have a warrant or is it required? And they'll be like, well, no. And then the person's like, well, bye. And that's how you're supposed to be able to tell they're guilty, because like an innocent person would just do it. It's like, no, make them come back with a warrant. Jesus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Going back super quick to the editing, that scene at the warehouse or brewer's factory yeast thing, there was a cut in the beginning. The CSI techs, they're in looking at this burned out pawn shop.
Right.
And it cuts abruptly from they're comforting the, I guess it's a sister and whomever that break in. And then it goes from that immediately to they're standing and looking and the guy hands the other CSI a roll of tape. They start taping it. And that just drove me crazy because I couldn't figure out, okay, did I miss something? Yep. Was there a dialogue thing that I missed?
Yeah.
No idea.
And why are they comforting? And why is that dialogue that it's like, find the people who did this? And then the CSIs yeah. are like, pat, pat. And once again, like, this bugged me from the jump with original Ray's CSI. That
you're
it was
not
like,
cops.
Why are they doing
yes,
cop
exactly.
detective things?
And every
like,
fucking
they're in interrogations. They don't even bother usually having, like, a legit LVPD person there. Like,
yeah.
that's fine.
But they,
right.
okay.
But the investigators, they have like relational whiplash with like, they do something like that where they're like, you know, tut, tut, they're there. And then like, I won't go into specifics because it's the next episode, but there's like a wedding scene, like there's a crime at a wedding ish. And they're all like, with this piece of evidence, I do thee make you my workmate. And like right in front of people who are mourning. And it's just like, yeah. you know, pick a lane. Are you the
yeah.
need to survive by doing, you know, dark humor about being around dead things all the time?
Yes.
Or are right. you the sympathetic investigator? Like, pick a lane. It was right. really weird.
This is the first introduction we get to Maxine, who's like the new boss, Paula Newsom's character. Where she right. comes to the shooting at Brass's house and she's like, this is the stuff I love. Like a huge smile on her face, like, okay, a person is still dead. Like, what the fuck? Yeah.
You're looking at a giant pool of blood on yeah. the floor.
Wee!
Take it down, a notch, madam.
Just a couple.
I don't mind if the character is that
notes.
Way. Just stick with it would
right.
be my,
right.
like, I, right. if somebody is, like, gleeful and it is, like, can detach the human cost from the scene and that's how they become, like, the ace investigator as a characterization, I'm fine with that. But yeah. just, like, don't, in the next scene, be like,
And they always had, like, the house mouse lab guys were always like that. Hodges was like that. Greg
yeah.
was like that. That they'd yeah. be like, sweet, live sperm.
Right.
And you're like, guy.
Right.
And then someone would have to, you know, tisk them. But yeah, I mean,
whatever.
Like, this has all the problems of the old show and like none of the sort of charms.
Yes.
That were, which part of it was just familiarity.
Yeah.
Honestly. But the unfamiliar parts of this, like, if they were trying to backdoor pilot this, like if they'd made it like a 2-hour movie or something, and then there was like, let's see how it does. And if people respond to the new characters, we'll spin it off. Like,
yeah,
I'm not responding to them. They're fine.
Nope.
Not into
yeah.
it.
No, it seems to me that's definitely the plan where it's like, we're making the old characters, the bridge characters to like bring you in. And then that's why there's all
yeah.
this, like it's semi-serialized, semi-procedural
mm-hmm.
where it's like, this is a huge hit, then it's going to be a new show. And like Gil and Sarah just go back to their lives or whatever.
Right.
But
good
I don't,
luck.
It doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Sorry to all of these actors, but.
I feel bad for them, but at the same time, because I went back and watched the very first episode, and not all characters look the same age. Like, you had a varying range of ages in the characters in the original show. Some of them looked young, like they were wet behind the ears. Some of them looked older. They came from, one was a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
There's this line that I loved from the original episode where Catherine is talking to the young new person and she says, if you don't feel like King Kong on cocaine, then you can quit. And I miss that enjoyment of the science and the tech and the, I'm a big, huge dork. I liked when they talked about what they were doing, even mm-hmm. though everyone already knew what they were doing. Didn't need an explanation.
Yeah.
But they managed to make that interesting. And they managed to work it in somehow within the action that I just didn't notice and didn't care and liked hearing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I was like, "Where? How did they get from yeast to brewer's yeast to a factory somewhere in the middle of wherever?"
Well, to that point, this was something I was complaining about to Dave when we watched these episodes, too. It's like, the reason that Sarah and Gil are brought back, Brass really needs you to work on his case. And yet, anytime any sciencing is happening, they're like, well, we only have 2,000 alleles or whatever. And Maxine's like, things have progressed since you did this work. So, like, you're not helping. You can leave. Like, there's stuff. They're clearly, the current lab people know more than you. Like, what are you contributing to this? It just seems like they're educating you this whole time, which I know they're being the audience surrogates, but it's like, why make your beloved characters, who are supposedly the bridge ones, look dumb like this, like they're unprepared?
Well, and that, I think, worked a lot better. This is another aspect that's like, when are we?
Right.
Because I feel like in 2000, when this first came out, like we really didn't have as broad a like layperson base of knowledge about this stuff, but mm-hmm. partly due to the original show.
Right.
And partly due to the explosion of true crime in everybody's life, whether you actively pay attention to it or not, people just like know about evidence collection and like rules of evidence and Brady violations and stuff like that, that I think to a widespread degree that wasn't 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So some of that explaining that you could sort of charge off as like, okay, you're explaining it to the audience. Like now, not only is it unrealistic, but it's unnecessary. Like, yeah. Why are we here? We're just here to hang out with Gil. And once that's over, so is my association with this reboot. Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the crime that we arrive at the end of the first episode, which is this attack on Jim has just been a pretext to lead the CSIs to this storage unit rented by David Hodges from the original series, the Wallace Langham character, who's like a real weaselly guy that no one liked. And it seems like he has taken a bunch of evidence out of the lab and possibly manufactured it or tweaked it or messed with it in some way such that like every case that he and I guess the lab in general would now be brought into question. And Sarah's like, he couldn't possibly do this. And Maxine is like, I don't know, it's going to be hard to prove it. Which, by the way, like, that's your fucking job. That's the point of the show. It's just like, you can prove things with the science. But anyway, Sarah is convinced David Hodges could not have possibly done it based on the evidence just of the first episode. Do we think maybe he did? Because right now he's working as an expert witness. He's not at the lab anymore. Sid, what do you think?
The question isn't so much whether or not he did it as whether or not I care.
Sure.
You're like, yeah, I would say let me know when we find out, but don't, because right. I don't give a shit. I mean,
exactly.
Can I just say who I think did it and you can cut it out if you think it's too spoily?
Spoilers ahoy.
His wife.
Yeah, his wife has to have done it. Economy of characters, right?
Yes, she's fishy.
Yeah. That is a long, painful con.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Mrs. Hodges. But
I mean, she's pregnant.
Yeah, with a baby. Exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, wow.
Is she?
Well. One final question. Is the reboot as Vegas-y as we would want it to be? This felt like they made a big show of being like, we are really on Fremont Street, but like it's the crimes themselves did not feel especially Vegas-y the way the original series was, at least at first. Yeah. Sid, you're shaking your head. You agree.
I didn't get the sense that you could wander sort of out and end up dying in the desert, because I know they had a bunch of episodes where there was either a run marathon or someone got stuck out in the desert.
Yes.
You got the real sense. But here, other than that woman opening shot of her screaming and flying down whatever the heck that is.
Uh-huh. Zipline. Yeah.
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 Is that a real thing?
Yeah. On Fremont Street? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Okay. I wanted them to get, naturally, because I am who I am, I wanted them to get more into like the currency part of it and like of all the places in the world where you would just sit on old bills, like this has to be the easiest city on earth to clean money.
Yeah.
But they didn't. Or like, I don't know, take it east, sell it to the mafia. I know a little too much about how to launder counterfeit money. Anyway,
ooh.
No hablo, FBI, don't call me.
It is time to go around the dial. First up, Tara.
Call the Midwife is back for season 10 on PBS. The whole season already aired in the UK in April. That's when it started. It's a long time to sit on it. I wonder why. But anyway, we've arrived at 1966. There are issues, for example. Sister Julianne is contemplating hiring out Nanatus midwives to a private medical clinic. Boo! And Dr. Turner is pissed because the NHS is for everyone, and I stand with Dr. Turner. A baby is born with limb differences and dies right away in the premiere. Warning. This has not been seen since the thalidomide times, but it turns out that a regiment of men who were on site for a nuclear test during the war now have a variety of ailments themselves, and several of their babies have been born with disabilities, and this is going to be an ongoing thing because Dr. Turner, like, wrote to the Defense Department. They were like, no, you can't have those records. And he was like, fuck you, I can't. So tune back in for that. Trixie is scandalized when she finds out the private clinic that she's been seconded to, love that, does illegal abortions off the books, not because she's opposed to abortion, but because they should not only be accessible to women who are rich. Mm-hmm. Val left between seasons in the premiere. They're just like, yeah, Val put in her resignation. She's just gone. Like, she did not get a goodbye scene. Don't know what's up with that.
Damn.
Trixie delivered a baby from a woman who turned out to have leukemia and died like a few days later. And they are clearly setting her up to have a relationship with the hot widower who's like looks like British Ashley Zuckerman. So grading on a curve. And Vi Buckle has her consciousness.
Turn up in a vest. Yeah.
He's pretty cute, but he's also, you know, he's got that hangdog look. I guess he's sad because his wife died. Vi Buckle has her consciousness raised about the housing crisis and lets new immigrants or people who are having a tough time with money or employment because they're not white, she's letting them shop on credit in her store, which is nice. And the only bad thing about Call the Midwife, other than its plot twists are not very twisty, is, as ever, seeing the care that mothers and families get from the NHS might make you bitter that the resources for families and individuals in this country are woefully inadequate, and yet we are not writing about it daily. So Call the Midwife back on PBS, probably Sunday nights, but check your local listings.
Time for a Tara update.
Yeah. Dave and I also watched The Legends of the Hidden Temple remake. It is on the CW. The original was a 90s kids game show. This is the latest Holy Mole alike. There's a temple. It's hidden.
It's hidden.
Probably in Santa Clarita. There is a big stone face on the outside named Olmec. It talks, kind of. It has like a mouth that like barely moves, like sub-theme park special effects level.
There's a guy. There's some poor intern there.
Yeah.
Just melting 95 degrees Santa Clarita heat with just like a bellow thing, just moving it up and down, trying to match it
like
up.
Like the scoreboard at Fenway. That's depressing.
It's bad. But anyway, Olmec gives instructions, tells vaguely mythical / historical stories with details you're supposed to remember for trivia quizzes later. And the rest is a bunch of physical games and puzzles that are like survivor challenges. And Cristela Alonso, stand-up comic, is the host. She's doing a lot. I don't think she has nailed her tone as a host because the show also has not nailed what age it thinks its viewers are or should be. Same problem that Frogger had. Like, originally it was kids doing this stuff, and now it's adults. Why? They start with four teams of two, and then they winnow them down to just one team, both members of which get to do the temple run at the end, solving puzzles and such on the way. The show is an hour. So much of it is filler with the stories no one cares about. I don't even think these are real myths. I think it's just shit they made up for the show. And then the big final temple run is only 4 minutes after every other show, all the stuff you've sat through. It is very frustrating. This show is bad. Don't watch it. Dave, I know you agree.
Oh, I loved it. It was... I have no nostalgia for the show because it was sort of after my time, but it does feel like they didn't do any translating when it went from the original iteration for kids and now they're going to redo it for adults. Those set pieces, you know, with the desiccated bodies you have to reach into to get the special heart to put into the thing. Like, as a kid, that would be kind of creepy, you know, if you're watching it, like you're 7, 8 or whatever. And I could see that working, but when it's the exact same vibe and there's 30-year-old doing it, it really loses anything that was frightening or scary or, you know, kind of like opening scene of any Indiana Jones movie vibes. All lost, right? On top of that, Olmec, the giant talking head, tells these stories, and they just go on and on.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's like parenthetical stories within these stories.
There
and
are.
There's like, I was like, I don't want to go down a Wikipedia hole with Olmec as a show. Like, that's what it kind of felt like. And I was just like, get to the fireworks factory, and it just doesn't. Yes. And the games themselves are so very budge. The games are not designed well enough to have the contestants be close to each other at the finish line.
Right,
so they have to do some really creative editing, and the creative editing is not good.
Yes.
Where, you know, they're just doing very back and forth, quick, very tight camera shots of team A, team B, team A, team B. And you know, just by the virtue of the camera shots, you know, it's as telling as the cat jump scare shots in movies.
Yes.
And sure enough, when one team actually gets to the finish line, there's a long camera shot, and you see the other team was fucking nowhere near. They're like still two games behind.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of like that. And it's just still feels like it could air on Nickelodeon and has that sort of vibe to it, and probably should have.
But let kids do it.
If you grew up, like, if you're a millennial who grew up with this show, this isn't going to do it for you.
No.
I feel
like some like millennial exec who loved the show and was like, let's remake it and have adults do it. And then, you know, maybe I get to be on it and test the games. Like, I never even heard of this show, so I don't know.
Not
but this is like redoing Double Dare.
Yeah, it was 93 to 95, so I think we were all too old.
Yeah.
But the one funny thing about it is that one of the teams they're the metal dads. They're both like in death metal bands, but they also have kids now. And so when we see them like in an interview, it looks like one is just a tiny bit shorter than the other one. And then we see them on the set, they're like so every time they showed them in an interview, it was like, oh my God, they put another box underneath the shorter guy. Like every time they cut back to their interview, he's got like a little tiny bit taller, which is amusing for me.
Aww.
All right. For my plugs, I wrote about CSI Vegas, kind of. It ended up being more about like William Peterson's career and how the success of CSI kind of changed CBS apparently forever. So you can find that at Decider. We'll link it in the show notes. And I've also done some recent Tony Randling on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. Last week, I was a fill-in contestant. I won't say how I did in Lightning Round, but, you know, there was no danger that I would be back. And I was a fill-in score master for Dan Casino Noise, in the latest episode that just dropped on Monday. So we will link both of those in the show notes as well. Always fun to pop by the USAQS.
Sid, what do you got?
So my picks are basically grief therapy due to the recent loss of Magic, my greyhound / foster cat / member of the Best Dog Ever group. I've been on a restricted TV diet, and basically any show I watch has to meet four criteria, which are 1, background easily watchable, 2, comedies with 3, little to no skippable emotional and or 4, problematic moments. Bonus points given for minimal mental energy requirements. So my first pick was Seinfeld. I watched this nonstop before and after Magic's passing because this has 0 emotional growth moments to get stuck on.
It was right in the pitch.
Joke density is medium. I mean, you got that laugh track. But the key thing is familiar dialogue, familiar beats, and it checks all 4 boxes. My bonus episodes, the ones that I may or may not have rewatched a couple times, were The Chronicles, Season 9, Episodes 21 and 22. Those were the 2 clip episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Superman and all those other ones that were hilarious. My second pick was for when Seinfeld's laugh track started to kind of get on my nerves. And that was and still is Brooklyn Nine-Nine's. Minus the last 10 minutes of Season 5, Episode 22, that's Jake and Amy.
Uh-huh.
Season, you know, Toronto, yep. Season 3, Episode 12, that's 9 days. Anything Terry Crews did in 2020, I'm just ignoring because I don't know. And the series finale. Basically, I've skipped that just because I just am in denial about it ending, and it's going to stay that way for a long period of time. Supermassive joke density, nonstop dialogue, makes it good background watching, minimal emotional growth moments. And the thing I like is that there might be a slight emotional growth, but immediately followed by a nice joke, which means no unexpected gut punches. Mm-hmm. Bonus on these are the stellar cold opens, particularly season 5, episode 17, which is the Dallas-Fort Worth one with the Backstreet Boys,
right.
Which I, at one time, I confess, I may have rewatched 10 times.
Yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine provided one of the best for me, and it was the Diane Wiest infection cold open. It's so fucking funny. I think about it every once in a while, just how like ballsy it's and like perfect. Out there it is. And it's just like the glee in which the pause before the answer came is just magnificent.
Cut him off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So cut him off right at the very end.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, plugs. I have 2 Twitter feeds, 1 Objective Sid, 1 Technical Bitch, Instagram feed called Once Again from the Beginning, in which I am teaching myself how to draw painfully and slowly. You can see the results there. Yes. And laugh or cry or grimace along with me. Yay.
Love it.
Servity Bunting.
Okay, content warning for everything, basically. I'm here to talk about Buried, which is a 4-part docuseries that started on broadcast Showtime this past Sunday. If you have the app, all 4 episodes should be available. It is about the Franklin case from 30-odd years ago. I have no contemporary memory of it, like many others from the time it disappeared in the sort of lens flare of senior and high school shit. But this is the big repressed slash recovered memory case from the late 80s. In which Eileen Franklin recovered under hypnosis the memory, maybe, of her father George raping and murdering her best friend Susan Nason when they were both 8 years old. George was convicted based almost solely on Eileen's testimony, and while it's clear he did something to Eileen and all her siblings, it's not as clear what Eileen actually remembered because it's literally never clear what anyone remembers and whether it's, quote, correct. The subject of Buried raises a lot of important questions about the, quote, criminal, quote, justice system and the ways it finds to work or not. But do I recommend Buried as a way into those discussions? I don't know. It is not an easy sit. I think the filmmaker's intent in not sparing us certain details is to suggest fairly strongly that Eileen Franklin may have felt she had no choice but to believe or to pretend. She remembered this story because the environment she grew up in the late 60s would not let her be believed or acknowledged about incest and other abuse happening in the home. I doubt it's conscious manipulation on Eileen's part. Something happened to Eileen. That something is almost undoubtedly George. But Eileen just as undoubtedly had absorbed over the decades that, quote, merely accusing her father of the monstrous deeds he actually committed would not be, quote, enough to get her pain heard and him punished. She would have to go bigger and tie it to an open case. This is rage-makingly instructive vis-a-vis the length survivors have felt and still feel they have to go to get anyone to fucking listen. It is instructive as to how willing the culture was to be scandalized by Eileen's story and then to be able to reject it as made up, which in turn let everyone feel safe and like we didn't have to worry about anything in her story or look out for it in our own homes and communities. It speaks to more than a couple of troubling double standards when it comes to the rules and rigors of evidence, etc. and so on. But as to this miniseries specifically, I watched the whole thing. I dipped myself in lye afterwards. I don't think it needs to go on as long as it does. If this is a case you do remember, 4 hours is going to be a little stately for you pacing-wise. It does get fantastic access to nearly everyone. It's not exactly innovative in its here's the center of our story, flashback to inciting events, but wait, there's more episode break structure, but that's fine. Whatever. Less fine. Sing it with me if you know the words. The multiple uses of contemporary footage featuring Matt fucking Lauer. Y'all, if you keep doing this, I'm gonna have to keep bitching about it on here. So just stop, because don't think I won't. Do not put this motherfucker in docuseries about sexual violence. Not wanted on the voyage. Sometimes, in spite of this, 30-odd-year-old cases have more to tell us than we think. So with the content warning for what the cops find when they search George's house in the first episode, and also for Matt goddamn Lauer, and for everything else, give it a try. Like I said, premiered on Sunday on Showtime. All four episodes should be on the app as we speak. And if you would like the full, all caps, fluorescent rage in my review, you can check that out at my true crime newsletter, bestevidence.fyi. We review and give casting updates and do book reviews on all kinds of stuff. I write that with Eve Beatty. And that's at bestevidence.fyi. Dave, cheer us up.
Wee!
So it's like in Moonstruck where the grandpa's like, someone tell a joke.
All right, now for our In Memoriam. Coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this week for all our supporters, it is Supernaturally Extended, where we think back to Supernatural, our favorite show here on Extra Hot Great, and how I believe halfway through his eventual run, it actually had a definitive ending, and like maybe the show was going to stop, but then like somebody said, how about we do twice as much after the definitive ending? And somebody said, yes. So we take that notion, we're going to do that for other TV shows. So what if your favorite TV show that went 16 seasons now has to do 16 more seasons after their finale? What would that look like? What would that mean to the characters and the storylines? You'll find out what's what on Friday on Extra, Extra Hot Great. And then right here on EHG Prime next week is I Know What You Did Last Summer. That is an Amazon series in which each episode is a different summer, I assume.
No.
20 episodes, 20 summers.
No.
It's the only way you can work it, as far as I'm concerned. And we welcome back Kate Sanchez from But Why Though to talk about everything spooky.
Spoopy.
You and your spoopy.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
Dear Mr. President, if your show cast a hacker, web developer, or systems administrator, displays a close-up of an IP address, web page, or any flavor of shell environment, references technology in any way, shape, or form, you must hire a technical consultant. Period. Full stop. There are too many close-ups, shots of obvious wrongness, and it is inexcusable in this day and age in which people who would consult for free exist. I am not a crackpot.
No, no,
the equalizer.
CSI was bad for this one. There's so many times when they're like, let's go to our database and all of the fonts would be like not display
Geneva.
Fonts in any way.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It's the bespoke interfaces that do only what you want and nothing more. Like there's no search variables on the page. Somehow it just knows that you're looking for Roger Smith from Henderson, Nevada. And he pops up. Yeah. He pops up. There's like pop-ups, and the pop-ups just happen randomly. Some overlap, like it's a crazy collage with red string on a wall. Like, that's crazy making. But to give you two stories about why this is and the people that make these decisions, way back when I worked on PlayStation.com, before it was actually PlayStation.com, back when it was Sony dot this dot that dot, like
oh,
whatever
God,
their corporate.
Tilde.
It was, it really was.
ESPN.
CompuServe.
It had three dots in its URL to give you an idea of how segmented it was. It had a subdomain and a sub-subdomain.
No.
Anyways, these people heard of something, and this is going to take you way back if you're an old fart like me. Do you remember Vermal? The programming language Vermal, it is a cousin to HTML, except it's basically a 3D rendering engine for the web way back. We're talking Netscape days. And you could build really basic 3D models. And we did this for a game called...
I think it was Destruction Derby.
Yeah, Destruction Derby. There's a racetrack and blah, blah, blah. They wanted, as soon as they saw that and saw that you can move around in this 3D environment, that they were like,
what if
we had the full PlayStation website and it'd be like different rooms for different like stores and stuff like that. Like basically it was like, remember the movie Disclosure with their whole 3D filing cabinet system you walked around in? It was akin to that, what they wanted. And that's what their brains sort of get attracted to. And similar to that is when, and Tara knows this story, she was around for this one, when we, at the same company where I was doing this, did the second version of Disneyland.com.
Oh, God, I remember
we
this.
We had one-to-one mock-ups of what the website was going to look like. So basically, we knew how to build a website, but they wanted to see the mock-ups. So we built these mock-ups in Photoshop, but they were like really close to one-to-one. What you see is what you get. And they would show these to the executives at Disney, and they're like, we don't get it. Like, is this, can you do? So we had to take these mock-ups from Photoshop that look like the website, give them to a traditional storyboard artist.
Like an illustrator who did it with pencil.
Who then turned these one-to-one mock-ups into like watercolor marker storyboard drawings, which then got sent to Disneyland for approval, got approval, and then we just did what we originally did in HTML. So they spent thousands of dollars for zero reason. And this is the kind of mindset that also gives you 3D walkabout computer models. And like when they go into the shell, they just type in password or whatever. And
or
it just
like everyone's standing around the SVU squad room and doing these Twyla moves to pull up people's mugshots on a floating like see-through monitor that somehow even John Munch, who is a gazillion years old, can operate by just like doing the Saturday Night Fever dance.
Doing a fly-in. Doing a fly-out.
Like, open face space, guys.
The way productions think the future means transparent monitors. Like, no one wants this. Like, why would you want to be able to see through what you're trying to be looking at?
Yeah. Immediately, there's going to be, like, it'll be like a sneeze guard, and you'll be like, I just can't even look.
Nope.
I just always be up there like,
And an addendum to Sid's whole rant, which I sign off 100%, is that if you do a bespoke interface, and shame on you if you do, but if you do, not every little thing is going to make a noise. In fact, nothing in your program is going to make a noise when you're searching a fucking database. It doesn't happen.
Nothing. Zero. It never happens. Do you have any idea how annoying that would be? To have everything make a noise.
Have you been on a subway with somebody who hasn't turned off keystroke tippy taps on their phone? Imagine that, but at your workplace, and you can't escape it. You can't get off at the next stop because you're there forever.
Right. But the crazy thing about that is that like these are written by writers on computers. Like, you know, computers don't make noises like that.
But hang on. There's that level, but then that goes to somebody else who's responsible
for whatever. There's the production executive who's assistant writes all their emails and gets them printed out
and
every
prints
morning.
Out their emails and reads them aloud with like poetry line breaks. Yeah. Oh yeah, we've all had that fucking boss.
It is time for the extra hot great canon. Today's submission comes from Game Time regular Chris Billig, the Billig of Goods. Here is his first canon entry.
Hey, it's Chris Billig. My task today is to get Taskmaster Season 2, Episode 1, Fear of Failure, into the Extra Hot Great canon. Taskmaster started out as a show at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe in 2010. New father Alex Horn didn't have time to test out comedy material that year, so he challenged funny friends to silly tasks each month that were then evaluated at the festival. Taskmaster became a TV series in 2015, with Greg Davies taking on the role of Taskmaster, with Horn serving as his assistant. 10 seasons, 8 international adaptations, and 1 BAFTA later, it remains my favorite show on TV. So many moments on Taskmaster could be considered for the tiny canon, but the canon itself is about entire episodes, so it's about finding one as a whole that stands out on its own. Thankfully, unlike other British panel shows, Taskmaster keeps its players together for whole seasons so they can plan out how they present the recorded tasks to create stories and build, and sometimes crush, relationships. Fear of Failure introduces a new crop of contestants: Doc Brown, Joe Wilkinson, John Richardson, Catherine Ryan, and Richard Osman. It also introduces a new idea: a player reading a task in a way that is wholly unexpected. It's considered to be the first time hacking a task has truly happened on the show, and it's led to tasks having more and more qualifiers across the seasons. The hacker in question, Richard Osman, is an interesting character for the show. He's not a comedian, but he's been involved in television production and presentation since he worked on the original Whose Line Is It Anyway? His interpretation of the task of getting 3 yoga balls to a mat on top of a hill leads to calling in the linguistics expert from the quiz show Countdown, a fine and storied British institution.
Is Richard Osman a genius, or should that not be allowed?
There's definitely something in there about the balls and up the hill.
Place. What was the exact challenge?
Place these three exercise balls on the yoga mat on the top of that hill.
Oh,
yeah.
On the yoga mat that is on the top of that hill.
I mean, is there any way of knowing for sure whether it's in the spirit of the challenge?
I think it matters what Susie Dent thinks.
Oh!
Yeah. Look out. So we are Susie
Dent. She's from Countdown.
So she said the wording of the task is open to interpretation. She said it's the classically ambiguous English prepositional phrase.
Which is the title of my new rap album.
She finishes by saying, I'd say how Richard decided to understand it is unusual, but not impossible.
No.
The secrecy on the show is genuine, and the in-studio revelations and arguments like this are part of the formula that makes Taskmaster so special. This episode also has what has been voted the best moment ever in Taskmaster history. Now, maybe it helps to have some prior knowledge of Joe Wilkinson, but what you see here is pretty much par for the course.
I was going to interrupt to say, if you think you might want to watch this show at any moment, skip what's going to happen. Go and watch it, because once you know what happens, you can't unknow it.
It's
and really
true.
Discovering it in the moment is priceless.
Yep.
With an unkempt beard and brown thrift shop suit, he often plays the loser type on these panel shows. When the prize he offers at the start of the episode is his wedding certificate, the audience knows he's not leaving with that wedding certificate. So expectations are low heading into the task of getting a potato into a golf hole without stepping on the surrounding green. Other contestants struggle with the task themselves, putting the potato on a leash, and building various contraptions to make multiple attempts at their throws. Joe, however, subverts all expectations when he gets it in on the first try. The crowd goes wild. Everyone is on their feet. The mood in the studio is celebratory. It's a moment worthy of a replay, but it's one that's cleverly edited to show he made the tragic mistake of stepping across the line. Even without a visual, you can hear the tone shift in the studio from celebrating his success to shock at this new revelation.
It's incredible. It's so incredible. I personally, I'd love to see it again. You want to see it again?
Okay, here it is again.
Oh. That's joyous. Guys, sometimes it's hard to be the taskmaster. Sometimes you've got to crush dreams.
That's the most exciting bit of sport I've ever seen.
Sure, mate. It's not like you're going back to an empty house.
Please don't take it away from me.
The moment is joyously sadistic, and it's a credit to every production aspect of the show that it's pulled off so well. Joe is further kicked while he's down with a task where he's trying to communicate in Swedish with recurring guest Fred is described as quote-unquote borderline racist. And by the time he has to do an in-studio task and pack a suitcase with ridiculous accessories, he's so frustrated that he punts a piñata off the stage. Fear of failure exemplifies everything I love about Taskmaster. The casting introduces a great mix of talent for both longtime and new favorites. Alex Horn comes up with great tasks that bring out comedic moments, and the crew is prepared to capture it all no matter what. Seriously, for a show whose only universal boundary is don't do anything illegal, they're amazingly prepared for anything and know just what to get on film. And the construction of each episode and series often builds a nice narrative, so while watching silly tasks is great, it's more than just the sum of those silly tasks. Taskmaster brings me tremendous joy at a time we all need it so much, and I hope this exemplary episode will find its way into the canon. In this, my first presentation, I can only ask you one thing. Please don't take it away from me.
Chris, thank you so much for the submission. Just two things before I get into my comments. It's currently in its 12th season, which just started a few weeks ago.
Wow.
Episode 4 of season 12 will air this week in the UK. You can find it through methods. And I was also going to say, Sid, with regard to your grief relief TV, Taskmaster is a great one. It's so, as you saw, it's extremely dumb, but extremely entertaining. And when I saw this in the doc, I was like, I don't know if you can find a Taskmaster episode that really encapsulates what makes it so great. It's like a sketch show where it's like there are highs and lows. But Chris picked such a good one for the reasons he said. One is the hack that Richard does. It really retrained not just the contestants, but also the audience to be like, well, wait, what would you do? What is the like secret trick to this that they've built into it? And sometimes like on a task that there'll be like, there'll be clues that are like under a table or hidden or whatever that you can find. But sometimes it's just like this, where it's just like, well, it said on the top of the hill, this is the yoga mat that was on the top of the hill. And everyone else is like, what the fuck? But then they can't really argue
God with it. God damn it.
And yeah, totally. That first clip, when I was watching it, I was like, and we'll see if I'm right. I was like, this conversation is what is going to make Sarah vote this episode in. Like the debate about the linguistics of the interpretation. But it's also in that task, it's the editing too, where it's like when we, you know, Joe leaves his one ball at the top of the hill, goes back down. It looks like it's fine. And then it just like very slowly rolls away like so a fucking dark Pixar character with this ball. It's like so funny.
I just wondered if someone was right off camera, like blowing on it because you could just tell it was fine. And then it started to subside. It was like, oh shit.
So slowly.
Dying.
And then the potato task, you know, Catherine folding the mat, but not thinking to continue folding it until she's just standing right next to it. It's like crazy. Followed by her hilarious expectation where she could not even get through. It was like, I don't care. And getting a hug from Greg.
I started crying. Oh, God.
I don't think it was laughing crying, but yes. And then Greg like hugging Alex. Adorable. But oh God, Chris is so right. The Joe segment, and I won't re-spoil it for anyone who's jumped ahead. All of it is so, every moment of it is so good. The editing, again, is like a key element of what makes Taskmaster so good. And what also struck me, because the past two or three seasons have been audience-free because of COVID, how much the audience reaction contributes to this moment of like the reveal of the potato task, because it would be so much flatter if it happened this season and let's like part of the secret sauce.
But also it was a little strange to see them doing challenges out in the wild again, because they were so, they contained everybody in the Taskmaster compound for the past couple of years. So,
yes.
Yeah, that was fun too.
All of that plus Fred the Swede. I mean, this episode has got it all. So excellent, excellent submission. Excellent choice of episode. Chris, thank you so much. Yeah. Sid, you picked this.
Yes.
This was your first exposure to Taskmaster. Please tell us your reactions to the episode and to Chris's case.
I am not a game show watching person normally, and I watched it early in the morning during my workout. That's another qualifier. Will this get me through a workout without crying? See, I'm laughing just thinking about it because of so many times where I actually busted out laughing while watching it, while working out. Times where I just stopped working out and just stood there and just, apologies to the neighbors downstairs, yelled what out loud at the top of my lungs.
Yeah.
Times where I just stood and just was yelling, apologies to the foster cats who were roaming around and ran away. Just so many good moments. And I actually went on to watch, I think the episode after that, I will be watching more of these episodes, so during my workouts.
The first 12 seasons are all on YouTube. It's the bowdlerized versions where there's no swears, but they're still great. Sarah.
I also wanted to watch all of them basically after this. The linguistic debate was appealing, but it was when the potato sailed in from off screen with the leash on that I lost it and was like, this is great. This did have extremely Whose Line Is It energy to me in the best way, because I'll forget about that show for like a year and a half at a time. And then we'll happen to come across it like just like channel flipping to watch something during dinner. And then 3 hours later, we're just like there, dirty dishes, laughing. It takes, this is a really smart build to to get at what makes really dumb stuff fun.
Yes.
And like the way that it sort of goes back and forth between like panel segments and the tasks, the way like the amount of each task that you get from each person, where the callbacks are put in, like it's all built extremely well and has such a good ear for itself and what it's doing. Like the ongoing jokes about Joe going home to an empty house, like occasionally just like jokes about, like this sort of Davy Jones running gag with the one guy who's short, his like Swedish, like, I don't like him. And now I really don't like him. And there was something about like that one guy muttering like, oh, he's a croupier. I'm a fucking idiot. I just thought it was so funny. And then that always comes back and the host is like, so how long did the Dalek take to do it? And they're just so smart with each other. And like, this must be so fun to go to a taping of and to have those moments and watch the playback and then watch frustrated contestants. Like before he punted the pinata off stage, he punched it so hard that his arm went all the way through it. Like, he was legit pissed. And look, when you've done Game Time with Tara Ariano as long as I have, you recognize this. You recognize this emotion and you respect it and you love it. This was so much fun to watch and to be introduced to. And I definitely can't wait to watch more of it. And I think it definitely qualifies as like, not like soothing exactly, but like this will suck you in and make you forget about whatever you're trying to forget about.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Yep.
One thing that Chris didn't say and that I forgot to say when I spoke before, sorry, Dave, to just jump ahead of you, is that sometimes you get a mix of contestants on this show where there's one who you can tell doesn't really care if they win. And this season was also good because they all, you can tell from this first episode, they're all like really in it.
Yeah, there was some like legit bitterness about Quidditch assignments that,
that's what makes it so good. There was a contestant this season on Taskmaster New Zealand, which just ended, David Correos, who was like, when he failed, would be like, get so mad. I was like, that's my guy.
That's us. Yeah.
Makes it so much better when they're like super duper engaged. All right, go ahead. Sorry, Dave.
I just want to fully explain the Dalek joke because I found it extremely funny. You needed some context. This is just the first, it's the potato on the green that you can't step on challenge. And half the contestants just absentmindedly try to throw the potato in the hole, and two of them do it and they fail, and they're like, oh shit, how do I get the potato back now? And one of them just builds this contraption. It's like a arm brace and then taped to like a golf club and then it's got like a little scoopy pushy thing, a plunger or something at the end. And then Greg Davies describes it as being a Dalek, which is great if you know if you've ever seen a picture of a Dalek.
He's like, I might keep this and use it for what exactly.
Oh, God.
This is only missing, I feel like, two common quintessential Taskmaster elements. One of which is when they make people do an incredibly exhausting, monotonous task and then reveal they only made one person do it.
Yes!
And that person gets really mad.
Oh, God.
Didn't count for anything.
Oh, that's a thing.
There was one of them this season where, or the most, not the current season, last season, where it was, they for some reason had access to a private plane and a bunch of the tasks took place on the plane. And the one guy's task, who he was the only one who had to do it, was like, stay on this plane until you pass gas. That's like, he literally just had to keep trying to fart for hours. And when he found out he was the only one who had to do it, he was much calmer about it.
Oh, well, I'm a vegetarian. That's no problem. Yeah. Leave the door open.
And the other element is when there is a complex task that takes a lot of engineering and then like there's an answer somewhere kind of in plain view, or they just have to flip something over or look under the table and like the clue, the solution to the whole thing is right there and they only discover it after the fact, or only one person sees it and they save that reveal for the last contestant film reel. These are like other elements that makes it a joy to watch and speaks to how well this is edited.
Well, and when you think about the camera angles that that they have to, like, they can't just edit something that, like, footage they don't have. So particularly right. the potato golf balls. Like, think about where the cameras had to be, and they had to make sure to get these angles that they knew would be funny. That, like, mm-hmm. here's right. the edge of field, and then the potato in slow-mo comes sailing in with this little parachute string, and it's just like, and it's a potato. It's funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
But they, yeah. like, they already know what they have to get. So it's not just the editing. It's like, we know what we have to.
Which shots.
Yeah, yep. the raw material. And
who gets the close-up.
So it's so smart yeah. about how dumb it is, truly.
Yes.
Yep.
One more thing nobody mentioned is just how quick and spot on Greg Davies is with being the taskmaster. That
him.
Line about you sound like you have to go home to an empty house after the whole marriage license thing.
You're a lonely potato throwing cheat.
Yeah.
So good. So
taskmaster good. Has that dry British, it's okay to laugh at somebody's misfortune. That doesn't play as well here as it does over there. But if you ever laughed at somebody who's tripped and fallen, give Taskmaster a try. All right, let's yep. put this to the official vote. Sid, what say you? Canon worthy or not?
Absolutely yes.
Sarah Day Bunting.
I've really got to change my lifestyle. Yes, totally. Thank you so much for this presentation. I adored it.
Tara?
Yes, 100%.
And me too. Now that means Taskmaster Series 2, Episode 1, Fear of Failure. You're hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for our winner and loser of the week. Who has this week's winner?
I do. It's everyone who wants to hear me try to do a French accent. Just kidding. It's Mademoiselle Caroline, as the movie Psych 3, or Psych 3, announces its premiere date of November 18th, a.k.a. 18 novembre. Mm-hmm. How'd I do?
That's pretty good.
Oui. All right.
And who is our loser of the week, Tara?
This was an ongoing...
Qu'est-ce que c'est loser de la week?
Loser...
This was an ongoing story that kept having new headlines throughout the week. Ugh. Dave Chappelle released a new comedy special last week on Netflix, which had a whole bunch of anti-gay, homophobic, transphobic material in it, and people got mad, including employees of Netflix who, you know, joined the chorus of angry voices tweeting about it. One of them, at least, and a couple of others were suspended by Netflix for speaking out. Tara Field was one who is trans. And then GLAAD yelled at Netflix about that. And so on Tuesday, as we're recording this, Netflix denied that they had suspended anyone about this. And the kicker is Dave Chappelle reacted to all of this backlash by saying he does not give a shit. So by the time you hear this podcast, there may be more developments on this story. It's all real bad.
I mean, there was some leak of a Netflix memo that was like, look, you know, Dave Chappelle is what Netflix users want. And it's like, well, I think Netflix users also want to feel safe. But okay. Mm-hmm.
Speaking about wanting to feel safe, but okay. Do you know what time it is?
Oh, the tall game.
Bonjour and bienvenue.
Oh, no.
This is
oh,
a new no. season of Game Time.
Oh.
Today we are playing Getting the Reboot from Dan Cassino, who earns himself an extra credit topic. Coming up with TV shows is hard, says Dan Cassino. So to make it easier, producers love to just take old shows and try them again, updated with a new cast. In this game, I will tell you about a reboot of a TV series, the years of the original and the reboot, and up to two sets of actors playing the same or comparable characters. Mm-hmm. So there's three levels of hints. 3, 2, 1. You can guess at every level, Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you.
They are difficult, so a lot of these will go to the third clue, I am guessing, so don't feel bad about not getting it on the first go. These can be tricky.
Okay.
Dan also notes, are some of these shows that only Dan watched? Yes, but that's
great.
What makes it fun for Dan.
Uh-huh. Well.
So with that, let's throw it to the picky.
We will start with valued guests.
All right, Sid's in hot seat, followed by Sarah and Tara. Are we ready to play Getting the Reboot? All right, Tara, steel meal situation, please, before we do that.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah D. Bunting has one steel meal. I have 10 steel meals. The valued guests have 3 steel meals plus the Eric meal. And we also still have 2 steel meals that Dave has to distribute, which he has not distributed yet.
Point of order, it is Eric's meal, like Lorenzo's oil. Okay, let's get into it. Question number 1. Remember, you have up to 3 hints you can guess after each one, Sid. But because there's so many guesses, we're going to keep it quick. Here we go. It is a 1977 high concept dramedy rebooted in 2021, this year.
Oh.
So you can guess or just ask for the next hint if you don't think you're ever going to get it.
Next hint.
Hervé Villechaize for Kiara Barnes. 2 actors that played the same character.
Fantasy Island?
Yes, Fantasy Island. Yay. That's good for 2 points. Sarah D. Bunting. This is a 1992 soap rebooted in 2008.
Let's say 90210.
Andrew Hsu for Colin Egglesfield.
Oh, I guess Melrose Place.
You were close. Yes. 2 points.
90210
was 1992. I'm an idiot.
Tara.
Yep.
A 1993 action show rebooted in 2021.
Oof. Hint.
Clarence Gilliard for Lindsay Morgan.
I don't know who that is, so that doesn't help. Hint.
Chuck Norris for Jared Padalecki.
Walker/Walker Texas Ranger.
Yes.
Padalecki.
Padalecki.
Don't you cry for me.
Back to Sid. A 1957 drama rebooted in 2020.
Drama rebooted in 19... Hint.
Barbara Hale for Juliet Rylance.
Oh, gosh. I don't know any of those people. Hint.
Raymond Burr for Matthew Rhys.
Oh, right.
Oh, other pus bucket.
What was that? Mother Hush Bucket?
Mother Fuss Bucket.
Pus bucket.
Okay.
Ghostbusters. Yeah, no, I'm out. I can't even... Nope.
Disgusting blob.
That is the HBO version of Perry Mason. Back to Sarah.
I would never have gotten that.
1951 cop show rebooted in 2003.
Dragnet?
Yes, Dragnet. That's our first 3-pointer. Tara.
Yeah.
I think this might be the first true Dan watched this show and maybe nobody else did. But you still might get it. We'll see. 1974 sci-fi show. Rebooted in 2005.
I think this year is wrong, but is it The Tomorrow People?
Wow.
Simon Oakland for Cotter Smith, and he has some information for you.
I know who Cotter
Smith is. You probably don't need it. But for the people listening, Tara.
Yeah.
Simon Oakland, the captain from Bullet.
Yeah.
Cotter Smith, the shepherd from Mindhunter.
Yeah. That still doesn't help. Hint.
Darren McGavin for Stuart Townsend.
Oh, The Night Stalker.
Yes, Kolchak.
Darren McGavin, that's right.
What?
Yep, 1 point.
Holy shit.
Back to Sid. A 1994 educational kids show rebooted in 2017.
Educational kids show? Schoolhouse Rock?
Child actor Stuart Stone for child actor Matthew Mintz.
Of the kind of bunkboard minces. Mm-mm.
Hint.
Lily Tomlin for Kate McKinnon, although Lily Tomlin shows up on the new one in a different role.
Something Lamb? No.
Lily Tomlin for Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon.
Any idea
Lambs?
There?
No, I'm not going to get it.
Anybody?
Magic School Bus?
Magic School Buses.
Ah!
Yes.
Oh.
Sarah, 1973 cop show rebooted in 2005.
Starsky and Hutch?
Dan Frazier for Chaz Palminteri.
A Bronx Tale, colon, the TV show?
Teddy Savalas for Ving Rhames.
Oh, Kojak.
Yes, Kojak, good for 1. Tara.
Yep.
A 1988 sitcom rebooted in 2021.
Saved by the Bell? Oh, that was 2020.
Dan Loria for Doolittle.
The Wonder Years.
Wonder Years is good for two. Back to Sid. 1985 action show rebooted in 2016.
1985 action show.
Yes. I'll give you a hint. The answer has to be pronounced in a certain manner or you don't get the point.
Oh.
Oh, God. Come on. I want to say Knight Rider, but you said pronounced in a certain way.
All right. Ugh. First clue is Dana Elkar for Cedrine Holt.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Look, they all can't be famous people.
Oh, come on. Come on, come on, come on. So nope. Dana. Hint.
Richard Dean Anderson for Lucas Till.
Oh. Richard Dean. It's not Battlestar Galactica. No.
Ugh. Not. Unfortunately, the answer you're looking for was, all together now,
MacGyver.
I knew I was going to kick myself.
Sarah D. Bunting, this is a 2001 superhero show rebooted in 2016.
The Tick?
Yes, it is The Tick.
Damn!
Whoa.
And this is for Tara. It will take us into our first score break.
Yep.
It is a 1976 action show rebooted in 2011.
Oh, no. Is this the Tomorrow People? Shit.
David Doyle for Raymond Rodriguez.
Oh, Charlie's Angels.
Yes, Charlie's Angels too. All right, Tara, let's hear them scores here at question 12.
All right, Sarah is in the lead with 9. I have 6. Sid is on the board with 2.
All right, and we are back to Sid with a 1967 drama rebooted in 2013. Here's a hint. If you had trouble with Perry Mason, you might have trouble with this one.
Oh.
Yep, I'm definitely going to have trouble with this one. Hint.
Don Galloway for Kenneth Choi.
This isn't Hawaii... Hawaii 501?
No, okay, it's not Hawaii, cool. I think.
Sorry.
The jeans they wear in Hawaii. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For Aloha Classic. Friday. Raymond Burr, again, for Blair Underwood.
Right.
Fuck. I was the only one who watched that shit.
It's Wheelie Good.
Oh.
No! Doggone it! I want to say, no, it's not... Duh. Yeah, I can't.
Anybody?
Sarah.
Ironside.
Ironside is correct.
Yeah, wow, I was never going to get
even
that
Mrs. one.
Even
Mrs. Underwood was like, nah, I'm good. I believe you're fine. I'm not watching it.
Sarah, a 1998 fantasy show rebooted in 2018.
Mists of Avalon.
Holly Marie Combs for Melanie Diaz.
Oh, right. Charmed.
Correct. 2 points.
Yep.
Tara?
Yep.
A 1995 game show rebooted in 2020.
The Weakest Link.
Jenny McCarthy for Kiki Palmer.
Oh, singled out.
Oh my God.
Quibi.
Wow.
Quibi makes it into game time.
Jesus.
Good gracious.
Sid, a 1981 soap rebooted in 2017.
1980.
I'll just let you know, this is prime time.
This isn't Beverly Hills 90210, is it?
Incorrect.
Crap.
John Forsythe for Grant Show.
Wait.
John Forsythe in the original, Grant Show in the reboot. It is not Melrose.
Oh! Is it Dallas?
Nope. One more hint. Joan Collins for Elaine Hendricks and Nicolette Sheridan.
And Elizabeth Gillies, technically.
Yeah, yep. Yep. Go ahead. Someone else steal Millet because I know what it is and I.
The show we're looking for there is Dynasty. Dynasty.
Grand right. Show expert lobster handler.
This is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
It is for Sarah. A 1980 action show rebooted in 2018.
1980 action show. They rebooted everything. Riptide. I don't know.
John Hillerman for Perdita Weeks.
John Hillerman
for Perdita Weeks.
Is this Magnum?
It is Magnum, yes.
Oh, wow.
Tara.
Yep.
A 1965 sci-fi show rebooted in 2018.
Hint.
June Lockhart for Molly Parker.
Lost in Space.
Lost in Space. That is good. For two. Back to Sid. A 1992 action show rebooted in 2010. Whoa. I mean, this is a show I've heard of, but this is the Dan edition, so don't feel bad.
Oh, get great. This. Fantastic, because, you know, I was doing so well. 1992 action show, 2008.
I think it might be even like a syndicated show. I don't even know if this was network TV.
Oh, my gosh. Action, action. A hint, hint.
Kirk Baltz. Yeah, Kirk Baltz for Chai McBride.
Oh, come on.
Any idea?
Nope, hint.
Rick Springfield, yes, that Rick Springfield, for Mark Valley.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I told you you're not going to get it. Don't torture yourself.
You've got to be kidding me. Yeah, nope, this is not going to... No,
the Liberace movie?
Nope, that is a show called Human Target. Human Target. It was on for a hot second.
You're just making Dan. Shit up now, Dan.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah.
A highly episodic 1977 show rebooted in 1998.
A very unserialized.
Yes.
Rebooted in 98, you said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Hint.
Lauren Tiwas for Heidi Mark.
Hint.
Gavin McLeod for Robert Urich.
Oh. We lost them both. Love Boat.
Love Boat and Love Boat. Next Wave,
oh,
correct.
Yeah.
Next Wave.
Next Wave. Tara. 1978 sci-fi show rebooted in 2004.
Is this Battlestar Galactica?
It is Battlestar Galactica.
Is this
correct.
The Tomorrow People?
No. If it's not in here, I'm going to be mad after guessing it five times already.
Sid, a 1983 sci-fi show rebooted in 2009.
Oh, come on.
I'm going to give you another hint. Very short title. One may say the shortest possible title.
Oh, come on.
I'm going to say you have a 1 in 26 chance of getting this correct.
Are you kidding me?
I am not.
Of course, now I'm my brain is going to freeze up. The shortest possible hint.
Mark Singer, a.k.a. the Beastmaster, for God, Morris Chestnut. That guy is a tough
Our
guy
kind of people, oh, Morris Chestnut?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
It is a 1983 sci-fi show rebooted in 2009.
Nine.
We swapped out Mark Singer for Morris Chestnut, and it is a one-letter title.
What? Ah!
I think if she didn't get it off that, she's going to not get it.
It is not Q.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's what I'm stuck on that. Hint?
Richard Hurd for Marina Baccarin.
Marina Bac...
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Oh, V! V!
Hey!
Took me long enough for crying out loud. That was my favorite show as a kid. Oh.
Woo, Sarah. 1989
yes.
Competition show rebooted in 2008.
Hint.
Mike Adamle, A-D-A-M-L-E, for...
Adam Lee?
Yeah, maybe. For Hulk Hogan and Aaliyah Ali. Two people to do the work of one mark. 89 competition show.
2009?
Rebooted in 2008.
I don't know. American Gladiator?
Correct.
Hey! Oh,
your gosh. Next hint was total Laser guess. And Zap for Militia and Crush.
Okay.
2 points. All right, Tara, take us into our second score break. A 1998 comedy rebooted in 2009.
Hint.
Paula Marshall for Sarah Paulson.
Cupid.
Cupid is correct. 2 points.
Wow.
Yes, That means it's time for the score break, Tara. Let's hear the scores. Oh, we are almost done this game. Everybody has a couple questions left.
Well, it got a lot closer than it was. Sarah is still in the lead with 16. I have 15. Sid has 3.
All right, Sid, you can do it.
Oh, my gosh.
This is worth 10 points. I so decree. Here we go. A 1976 action show rebooted in 2007. I'm trading in my steel meals for this one 10-point question. So after this, we're all done. Here we go.
All right.
1976 action show rebooted in 2007. This is worth 10 points if you can get right away.
1976 action show.
$6 Million Man. You're close. Lindsay Wagner for Michelle Ryan.
$6 Million Woman.
No. Want to try that title one more time?
Wonder Woman.
No.
Wait, what?
Oh, no.
You did the sound. I was just like.
I'm sorry to laugh, but that was kind of funny. The answer was not the $6 Million Woman or Wonder Woman. It was the Bionic Woman was the name of the show.
Ah!
You're all
my
around
gosh.
It, but not on it. And goodbye, Steel Meals. Okay, Sarah D. Bunting, a 1990 yes. superhero show rebooted in 2014.
Hint.
Biff Mannard for Jesse L. Martin.
Biff Mannard. Can I have the years again?
1990 superhero show rebooted 2014.
You're going to get it on the next clue. Oh, yeah. For sure. 14.
Can you just steal mail at any time?
Nope.
No.
Crap.
We'll throw it to you for the answer.
She's going to get it.
She will get it.
Next hint.
Yeah, I need the next hint.
John Wesley Shipp for Grant Gustin.
The Flash!
Yep.
Yeah, that's good for 1 point. To Tara.
Yep.
A 1987 kids animated show rebooted in 2017.
Hint.
Rusty Taylor for Danny Pudi.
DuckTales?
DuckTales is correct. For two.
Tara ties it up.
Everybody's last question is here.
Oh my gosh.
We will start with Sid. 1975 cop show rebooted in 2017.
Hint.
Robert Urich.
Urich.
Robert, god damn it.
Bless.
Robert Urich for Alex Russell. I just gave you the good hint. Right away. See if you can get it. It's kind of a tough
one. And I know Robert Urich. I just.
Forgettable show with a theme everybody remembers.
Oh, come on.
It's four letters and it stands for something. There's more hints for you. And it takes place in LA. You got one more hint if you need
it. Damn it. Hint.
I'm going off script. Also a movie with Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes, it was.
Shaft? No, that's not it. I know it's not it.
What does Shaft stand for, though?
Special.
Hollywood. Action
shit,
franchise.
A fucking tragedy. Oh, wait, that doesn't work.
The show we were actually looking for is SWAT. SWAT was the show. Sarah D. Bunting. 2003 reality show rebooted in 2018.
The Mole?
The Mole is incorrect.
I like that guess, though.
We have Ted Allen for
Anthony Perowski.
Yeah, thank you.
Anthony with an I.
Nope. Next.
Kyan Douglas for Jonathan Van Ness. Van Ness.
Oh, is this Queer Eye for the Straight Guy?
It is Queer Eye / Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
I got it off of Kyan. Yikes.
All right, Tara, you need to answer on the first or second clue to clinch today's game.
Yeah, you got some room.
A 1991 drama rebooted in 2011.
Hint.
John Benfield for Brian F. O'Byrne.
I can picture him, but I don't remember what shows he was in. Last hint.
Helen Mirren for Maria Bello.
Prime Suspect.
Prime Suspect is correct. All right, let's hear them. End of regulation scores, please.
Well,
do we have to?
Sid finished with 3. Moving on. Sarah and I are tied with 13 points. 18 points.
Dun, dun, dun.
So this is between Tara and Sarah. I will start reading clues. Answer as often as whatever you want. First sure. time I hear Chicago a right answer, voting. I will
got
ding
it.
It.
Got it.
Well, it'll just be chaos, but we'll try to make sense of it in post.
Oh, what a change of pace.
Here we go. A 1966 soap rebooted in 1991.
Dark Shadows.
Yes, Dark Shadows. Whoa! Right away.
Yes!
Did not even need the Joseph Gordon-Levitt hit at the end.
Oh my God.
Oh fuck, I forgot.
Joseph
about that.
Gordon-Levitt was the Ooh. Wow.
He was the coffin.
Dark Shadows.
Sarah
takes the first game of the season. Sarah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We tested our luck and zoomed into the CSI reboot, CSI Vegas, before going around the dial with stops at Call the Midwife, Legends of the Hidden Temple, Seinfeld, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Buried. Sid proved why she is not a crackpot for insisting on technically accurate portrayals of computing on TV. And then Chris tasked us with voting Taskmaster Series 2, Episode 1 into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time from Dan. Next up, Supernaturally Extended on Extra Extra Hot Great, available at patreon.com/extrahotgreat. And on the next EHG Prime, I Know What You Did Last Summer, the show where every episode takes place in a different calendar year. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tari Ariano,
please don't take it away from me.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Sometimes you gotta crush dreams.
And Sid.
It's not like you're going home to an empty house.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Oh, wow. I was expecting that to be good.